It's the first adult color science fiction film. It's Buck Rogers for the mature. So sit back, fasten your seatbelt, and behold...
You better take pretty good care of me if you know what's good for you.
Gary Coleman rockets into the 25th century as the president of a distant planet, trapped on a world where only Buck Rogers can save him.
I want that boy found.
Whose side are you on?
He's from old Earth, 20th century. Your time.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to kill you, Captain.
You're gonna watch these people every minute.
It's time for another Buck Fucking Rogers in the 25th century. This week we'll be covering every few months. So we're going to be covering Cosmic Whiz Kid, originally aired on November 15th, 1979. This is the most notable episode as being a guest appearance by Gary Coleman, one of two over the course of the series.
Does he play the same character on both episodes?
Or yes, he does. Hieronymus Fox, who's the president of Planet. I'm not going to worry about it. You're a different Strokes fan, or at least you were at one time. Is that correct?
When I was little, my mom used to watch it, and we only had one TV in the house, so it was kind of like just watch it with her. I was okay with it, but I was never a big fan. I just remember liking the theme song.
Can you sing it for me?
Hell no. I just really like different. I don't remember it all.
What's he like?
And I just don't remember if the actual song was in Spanish or in English. Because we have some shows that some of the theme songs that are like translated into Spanish. Some of them there were just kept in English. And if it's kept in English, you know, I didn't know any English back then. And so I don't like recall what it's actually said.
Now the world don't move to the beat of just one drum. What might be right for you may not be right for some. A man is born, he's a man of means. Then along come two. They got nothing but the genes, but they got different strokes it takes. Different strokes it takes. Different strokes to move the world. Anything?
Yes, I do remember the song, and I think it was actually in English. It was one of those few theme songs that they left her in English, just like Save by the Bell. That was another theme song from a TV show that they were just left her in English.
How many years would you say you watched of Different Strokes? Like,
well, the thing about it in Mexico is that, you know, as you know, that we get the TV shows after they've been into syndication, and they show it every day, pretty much like if you watch here, like a syndication show. So I would say I watched it for like at least a couple, 3 years, and then I got too old for like, I was never too much into the humor of it.
Mm-hmm.
So even now when I try to watch it, it's just like, I just don't like the whole Arnold, what are you talking about, Willis? Mm-hmm. And kind of like that sassiness, I don't know, weird.
So was it more just about familiarity because it was on, it was something your mom watched, so you're familiar with it, but you wouldn't necessarily consider yourself a fan of the show?
I was not a fan of the show, no.
Okay, so you're just familiar.
And I think that was what, like mid-70s, early 70s?
As far as I can tell, it started in 78, so essentially the season before Buck Rogers got started, Different Strokes began, but Different Strokes was much more successful. It ended up running, I think, roughly 9 to 10 years. It actually moved networks. I believe that it was on, I want to say NBC, obviously NBC, because same network as Buck Rogers.
But I was pretty young then, because I if that was the case, normally Mexico get the shows like, what, 3 or 4 years after they've been running here in the US, so we got it, you know, 84, 85 or so. So I was like really young whenever we started watching it, I guess. So that's why I hardly don't remember anything.
Do you know anything about all the tragedies related to Different Strokes?
Oh, yes. I mean, that this guy like drugs and alcohol, and I know that Gary Coleman was like exploited by the parents, and then he pretty much ended up bankrupt, and he was working as a security guard, I think, yeah, at the mall or something like that.
Yeah, he got into an altercation with a woman, and there was lawsuits and stuff. It was nuts.
And then I think he got married at one point, and the wife, it was just like a piece of work. And I think he ended up dying alone or something like that, or like he was being murdered. Like it was like
he wasn't murdered, but he died young. I think he died in 68 and he died in 2010. So
I think he died like in the apartment, in his apartment, and it was like some questioning about the wife or something, like I don't know, something like that. I was just watching one of those shows, like the real shows or something.
I was just doing the middle of math. He's like 42.
Yeah.
Okay. I think when he died. So it said he died in the hospital, but he might have collapsed or something at some point. Obviously, he probably had some health issues. He was a little person. There's part of what gave him his career is that he was playing younger than he really was. I think that Arnold was supposed to be like 7 or 8 years old, but he was being played by a 10 to 11 year old. And so he could, have an easier time memorizing more of the script and taking part in more of the episodes.
Well, that's fairly common though.
Yeah.
That's fairly common that the child actors are like older than that what they played. And I think I remember that I like more the brother Willis.
Right.
I think that I like
him more mild mannered. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what I like. I never liked the even when I was younger. I never liked that sassiness. That that humor.
I was more of a Webster kid. He was also more mild mannered. But if you have the clash of the little person black kids with white parents that are yuppies, or in the case of Mr. Drummond,
I don't know.
Very, very rich. But I was more of a Webster guy, although I don't think I would have any patience for either one of those shows
anymore. Yeah, I remember that I do like the nanny too, the housekeeper.
Well, she spun off into her own show, right? Did you ever watch The Facts of Life?
I don't think so, no.
She was the den mother at a girls' boarding school. I liked Facts of Life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's another one. Do you know that song?
No.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have The Facts of Life. I miss songs, shows with theme songs you could actually remember and sing and stuff.
Can you sing the Save of the Bell?
We were Saved by the Bell. It's about all I got. I never watched Saved by the Bell that much, to be honest.
I used to watch that one. So like such a bad, confession here. It was kind of like, I was fairly young at that time, and I was in Mexico. We don't have that many TV shows, and it was kind of like something to pass by the time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
I thought some of the girls were cute, but I was honestly a little too old for Saved by the Bell once it came on. I was a little aged out of that age bracket. They did the revival recently though, right?
Yeah, I have not seen
it. I've actually heard some good things about it. I mean, I have no interest in seeing it because I don't have any nostalgic connection to the show, but people have said it's actually kind of like the Cobra Kai of sitcoms in that respect, where they evolve the show and they definitely make it more about the new kids, but they have a good integration of the older characters and the young kids that are being introduced, and they also give it a little bit more weight than the original show, but it doesn't necessarily spoil it. So I've heard some good stuff. You might really want to check it out one of these days.
Okay.
So anyway, can you tell me about the episode we just watched?
Okay, so the episode is, they kidnap this president, the Gary Coleman character. What was it?
When you say who's they?
Oof, I don't remember.
The whole job of this person, Roderick Zale, he is a serial kidnapper of political entities. Takes them back to his
mansion or
planet of iniquities. Yeah, because they are, compared to the Barbary Coast, it's a planet that's apparently completely lawless. Prostitution and gambling, all that kind of stuff. And if he doesn't get the money, he usually kills the political person. So that's a major concern. But what's so special about this particular president?
So this president, quote unquote, is a 10-year-old kid that is from the 20th century, for which it was so funny because it is actually all of his humor is from the 20th century.
Well, I know he has some bonding later in the episode when he gets to talk to Buck about how he misses cheeseburgers and comic books.
And cartoons.
He calls his kidnapper Dr. Doom at one point.
Oh, he does?
Mm-hmm. Dr. Doom jives, I believe what he says. Something along those lines.
Yeah, so they kidnap him.
Now, how did he survive, though?
I mean, how he survived.
Do you remember how the kid survived?
Yeah, so whenever he was in the 20th century, he was a boy genius. I think he got like his degree in physics at the age of 9 or 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And he developed this freezing method.
Cryogenics, yeah.
Yeah, and but he wasn't sure that it would be safe for humanity. And then when the Holocaust happened, for which I was like, I don't like the term of that use in terms of like
the association is very strong with Jews and other German undesirables in World War II, but it isn't a specific term to Jews. Just like I've heard folks say that.
Oh, I know that. I know it's not. not as specific.
I know you know that too, but I'm saying, like, in recent years, I've heard a lot of talk about how you're not allowed to say ghetto anymore. And it's like, I'm sorry, but Jewish people get to say ghetto because they had their own ghettos too. It was a weird thing in the 70s. There was the use of the word Holocaust was really common. They hadn't started using terms like post-apocalyptic or apocalyptic. Their term in the 70s for those type of features was Holocaust.
Oh, that
and I think an awareness of the faux pas that was relative to the relatively recent memory of Jewish survivors, that sort of faded out but with the end of the decade. But it is kind of interesting because we're recording this on the day of the rioters, the insurrectionists taking the Capitol. And so it's like, we're feeling a little Holocausty, but per the timeline of Hieronymus Fox, we're actually running a little late.
Yes. So yeah, so they keep calling it the Holocaust. So whenever he, when the Holocaust happened, he froze himself because he was the only one who is like, I'm just going to risk my life.
Yeah.
For which it doesn't make sense because it's like, if you're not safe, you're not sure that it's going to be safe for other human beings to do this. Well, you're still going to leave him there to die because you're fucking in the middle of like the fucking Holocaust.
Well, apparently it was like a prototype, so most probably he didn't have anything. He had one for one person, and so he was the one person he saved because he didn't know if it was going to work or not. So it's a sort of like a Kal-El thing in the rocket ship. They didn't have a rocket ship that would fit mom and dad as well, so they put the baby in the rocket ship. In this case, he was his own baby.
Yeah. So he froze himself, and then he woke up, I guess, you know, in the 25th century. He was shipped or worked from planet to planet, helping.
Yeah, they thought him out, and since he's a genius, his brain is valued on planet after planet, but he finally finds one that loves him so much and values him so much that they make him their president, or they ask him to be their president.
Well, finally the country, the planet that he's on is like, okay, well, he's gonna help us here and he's enjoying it so much, so we just gotta call him the president. That's what he was at when the kidnap happened.
Yeah.
And then
he's got his personal security guard, Lieutenant Dia Crichton, played by Melody Rogers. Would you like to describe this woman's outfit?
Typical go-go girl from the 60s or 70s.
I was going with space hooker because, I mean, she's got like the tightest tight pants that ever there was.
And the hair. That was
And that was my problem. She's got a pretty banging body, especially in the tight pants. But then when you add on that poodle perm and the fact that she has these silver elbow-length gloves and knee-high boots that are just so bulky. It looks like she's got like dishwashing hand gloves, you know, like you can tell she's having trouble interacting with her environment because of these clunky things they put on her. And then she's got that weird padded half shirt with the bullet breast things. And my favorite part though, that big silver purse. And it's like, you really don't look like a badass security guard with a gigantic silver purse, but they do keep having her pull stuff out of the purse. So I guess it was useful.
Yeah. So they were together and, they got some gas. I think I don't remember the actual name of the gas. And so to kind of make him go to sleep.
Remember too, he was so brilliant. He was able to get a whiff of the gas and identify what it was they were going to use against them. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it is like not too much averse to the health of blah blah blah.
Yeah.
So yeah. So they kidnapped the guy. The guy seemed to be the Gary Coleman character. He seems to be very calm. And then when he arrives at the place where the Salo, what's his name of
the bad guy, Roderick Zale.
Yeah. When they got to that place, I mean, he was just like, yeah, sure, whatever. And the guy said, well, if they don't pay for you, we have to kill you. And the guy is like, nah, yeah, you're not gonna kill me because I am worth a lot of money because I'm brilliant.
Yeah,
so
if
you
my
pretty
plan
much
doesn't pay for me, one of the other ones will. You gotta have to take good care of me. So let's get on the cheeseburgers for starters. I want some good cheeseburgers. And of course, cows are extinct at this point. So there's a specific lizard you have to get that's the closest approximation to beef. So he's a real pain in the ass about trying to get all the stuff that he wants from them, but they're trying to appease him as best they can.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, I'm not gonna tell you what is in the milkshake. You know, well, it's the same thing that is in the fucking cheese, isn't it? You want a cheeseburger, so it's gonna be the same thing. He's all peaceful and like relaxed and everything. In the meantime, the bodyguard was going to the planet where Buck Rogers is at.
Yeah.
What is the name of the main guy? guy? Like the white suited guy?
That's Dr. Huer.
Huer. Okay. That guy, I mean, I love that guy. I think he's the only character in the whole show that I'm just like...
Well, I mean, he has the kind of hands you like. He has the kind of body you like. He has the mannerisms.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Everything is just the
he's
way...
He's very proper. He's very mild, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, the whole show is like, okay, forget about this guy. Just show me him. You know, just show me this guy. So when the bodyguard arrived at the place where Buck Rogers, right, I guess the home base,
yeah.
She's asking to help to rescue the president, and that deer was
a woman Deering. That's the female agent that typically
Deering.
Works with
woman Deering.
Woman Deering, yes.
Yeah. So him and her and the guy, the Dr.
Huer,
they're discussing about, oh no, we cannot help you, and it's like, yeah, but it's just a child, yeah. You know, help me out. No, we cannot help you at all. Blah blah.
Essentially, the planet Galilea has refused diplomatic relations with Earth, in part because they didn't want Earth to know they were being run by an 11-year-old. You know, so
So they pretty much refuse to help, and then she's like, okay. At that same time, Buck Rogers walks into the office, saying, okay, I'm off for my vacation, and bringing a plant for which is say, you know, it's a plastic plant. You know, it's
it's a rubber tree plant, so it is a real plant, and he went through a lot of trouble to find one to give it to Dr. Huer, but it's the 20th
century.
Oh, that
makes sense. I thought he meant it's just that it's just a plastic plant.
Yeah, because
he says a rubber plant.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, why are you going to feed and water a fucking plastic plant?
Yeah.
For which is it didn't make sense, but now
it's the type of plant
sense.
From which rubber is derived, right?
Ah,
and that's why you have to water and feed it still. But in the 20th century, they don't do plants anymore, which is weird because they're really mellow. You'd think that they'd be plant people. They're not, and so now one of them knows what to do with this stuff, which is basically how you and I would be at the same, you know,
yeah, pretty much.
Like, remember we went to that cake concert that time, and for some reason somebody gave them a tree, and so they were going to give the tree to a member of the audience to get rid of the thing, basically.
I don't remember that at all.
You don't remember that? Do you remember that concert at all?
That's the one that we have the mosquitoes being like a threat or something. Like, there was like this big thing about it was this special mosquito that it bite you, it like make you sick.
I mean, that's happened, but I don't relate the two incidents to one.
I do remember because I normally am afraid of big crowds. You know, I have social anxiety, and I have so, but especially like in a lot of crowds, so it just makes me feel if it's not Enrique Bunbury,
yeah.
For the rest of them, I have anxiety.
Well, it helps your head taller than most anybody at an Enrique Bunbury concert.
Yeah,
so.
No kidding. So, and I remember that we were in the concert, and we were talking about if we were gonna go or not because of this thing that has been going on. So it wasn't that many people in the cake concert, and the entire time I'm freaking out because it's like, okay, you know, that's the mosquito thing.
Yeah.
So
aside from the plant thing and just generally enjoying the show, the main thing I remember is when we left, assholes were peeling out and honking their horns, playing The Dissonance at full blast because Cake didn't play their signature single. And of course, we went with Mac, and we're definitely the kind of people who like poo-poo, oh, you're going to do the big radio hit? Blah. You know, so
we were
happy they didn't play The Dissonance. But of course, all the plebes in the audience were like, why didn't they play The Dissonance? He's going for speed! You know, so yeah, that kind of shit.
I just remember that we went with Mac too. Man, I don't remember that concert hardly at all.
That's like one of maybe two concerts that you attended with me and the guys, right?
I think it's only that one.
I thought you went to a...
No, I think it's just
you didn't go to Toadies with us at any point?
No.
I thought...
The only concert that I go with you besides Enrique Bunbury is with your sister.
That's right. Never mind. I remember now there was another gal that went to a Toadies concert and it was unfortunate. So,
yeah, because it wasn't me.
Yeah. She was
I am delightful.
Yeah, no, I'm getting flashbacks now. No good. We got stuck behind a pillar and like there was a lot of bitching. It was a bad experience of many Toadies concerts we attended. That was almost certainly the worst.
Yeah. So anyhow, so they got in and Buck Rogers was like, oh, I'm gonna go on vacation now.
Yeah.
And oh my god, I have to tell you about this. The most thing that I like about this episode was that I don't have to see him in his fucking silver
outfit.
Like when you told me that we were gonna record Buck Rogers and I have to watch an episode, I'm like, I don't want to see him in that uniform. He didn't put it on the entire show. So I was happy. Instead, he was wearing like this all brown with boots outside the jeans.
Well, he was on vacation, see?
Yeah, sure. I relate vacation with that outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. That's what you use when we go on vacation all the time with the boots, you know, outside the pants. So he walked in and the body bodyguard was just telling him, oh, well, you know, I'm leaving, I'm going to save him myself and stuff like that.
I don't think she told him what he was there. She was there for. She just pointed out... We skipped a few episodes because I've got things in mind. There was an episode that featured Jamie Lee Curtis that we haven't recorded yet. And that was, I believe, the episode prior to this one. And so I guess he had gained some notoriety from saving a woman from this prison. And, you know, he's like, oh, she immediately locked into him as far as a person of interest. And that's when she decided to come back to his place before he goes on vacation and get him with a space hypodermic.
But before that, it was actually said that the Howard, the general?
Hewer.
And the Deering?
Wilma Deering, yes.
They were actually saying, well, you know, it's like, I feel bad for not telling her, but we actually going to search for this kid. It's just that we don't have to let them know.
Essentially, the Federation is a reference they make. I don't think that they call the organization that runs the 20th century the Federation very often, because that's a very Star Trek term.
Mm-hmm.
But in that particular instance, they did, and they're having to keep secret the help they're going to give to save this kid, because if the Federation found out, they'd be in trouble. You know, it's all going to be done on the down low. So it's basically just Hewer and Wilma. They don't even let Buck know, in part because Buck ain't even supposed to be around.
Yeah, he's going to be
But they also don't know that the chick's going to go kidnap Buck, essentially. There is a cute moment, though, where they're playing this music of the future, and he specifically tells them, cut it out, you're killing me, put on some of my music, and they play Shambhala by Three Dog Night. Are you into Three Dog Night at all?
No. Yeah. I didn't recognize the song at all.
Yeah.
Like, nothing. I knew it was something about his time, but I
would think, since you're a CCR person, I would think you'd have an appreciation for Three Dog Night, but I remember playing them for you a while back, and you just sort of tuned them out. I like the hits, but I don't even know if I can support a full greatest hits album. I just like the handful that everybody knows, and I'm not sure how much deeper I go than that. I do like seeing Buck grooving to his music, and it's nice to, you know, we just recently saw one of them in 1984, and it's nice to see a 70s show with some 70s music, even though it's set in the 25th century, but it's nice to have a little bit of that period authenticity there.
So
against his will, he gets taken to the planet where they think the kid's been kidnapped to, and Buck really isn't into it. He really wants to have his vacation. He doesn't appreciate how he's been coerced, but because
sedated, right, to actually go.
Right, but once he comes out of the fog, when he's in the fighter, then he starts to get pretty pissed off. But because this is a kid from his time period specifically, and I think probably because it's a kid too, he finally agrees and they get to the planet.
Yeah, so they arrive at the planet and it's like you describe a casino. I don't know, a casino. What is like, Buck Rogers with casinos, man?
Yeah.
The last episode that I watched, they have like Tijuana kind of like casinos, and now we have this one right here. So they try to get information in that place, in that casino. And I did enjoy that, actually, that part where they're like talking, oh, well, we need to find out who we need to ask and blah, blah. Then this guy start like talking by telepathy,
mm-hmm,
and is saying, oh, I am such and such. And so kind of just talking I'm right here at the machine.
This is Selmar, and he's a mildly green-skinned individual played by Earl Bowen, who's probably best known as playing the psychiatrist from the Terminator movie.
Oh, yeah. Okay, now I recognize him.
He's 10 years plus younger at that point, but he's already lost his hair.
Yeah.
I could definitely see between the green cake makeup and the being a younger person, you wouldn't necessarily recognize him. I didn't recognize him, but, you know, research.
So the entire time he's talking to them via telepathy.
In my mind.
And then it's just like, it's so funny when they finally show the guy. It is so hilarious because it's like you say, it's got like a tint of green,
mm-hmm,
greenish. But then the entire time he has his mouth closed because he only talks to with his mind. But then you can see like his mouth, like he wanted to talk something, mm-hmm, or he was just like...
Almost like he's trying to mouth how long of a pause it should be.
Exactly. Yeah. And then like the most later part too as well, like the eyes. Like he tried to make the expression with the eyes more than with the face. And then he just go like, you know, opening his eyes and making like this, you know, weird expression on his side. Like I thought that was hilarious. So he told them that pretty much, no, he doesn't know anything.
What he explains is he knows everything about Buck and the lady.
Well, because he can read the minds.
Right, but so he knows somebody who's involved with the kidnapping is in his proximity of about 30 meters, 40 meters,
50,
he 50, won't know anything.
Feet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's why he doesn't know anything, because nobody is within his range. And then he makes a joke like, oh, even those have like limitations. Ho, 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 ho. But he's laughing with his eyes, not with like ho, 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 ho. So at the same time, they have like this third guy or the bad guy, the kidnapper, having this conversation with this. The way I see it is like he's a Super Saiyan or something like that. Because I don't know, are you familiar with Dragon Ball?
You know better.
Okay, with Dragon Ball, you know, like Goku and Vegeta, they like to train in like heavier gravities than Earth, so they can have like a more physical stuff. And that was so funny because that's how they describe it. Like, this guy was born in a planet where it's like a more heavier gravity than Earth. Mm-hmm. And this guy is like super short, super skinny.
He's probably about 5'4", I guess.
Yeah, super skinny, old guy, you know, like, yeah. It's like the ones.
At one point, they're trying to buy some time, and so they ask him for his biography, and he basically explains that on his planet, he's a weakling, or considered to be anyway, and that he could either stay there and become a librarian, or he could journey beyond his world and become a Terminator. And that's his official term, which is funny, given that we have the guy from the Terminator movies as well.
Yeah. So he pretty much is...
I'll point out too that the fellow is played by Lester Fletcher. Apparently, according to IMDb, he's best known for a one-off episode of Battlestar Galactica. And pretty much everybody in this episode did at least one Wonder Woman episode, and he did as well. But these are people who are just on the circuit of TV shows in that time period. So unless you're watching those shows in that time, you wouldn't necessarily know who these people are.
Yeah. So, but yeah, he's super weak link and stuff. And
well, except in where he, once he goes after Buck and the gal.
No, he's weak link Lunky.
Right.
He's
right,
not
right.
Like, he's but supposed he's to be like super strong.
He's strong, and he absolutely
he's looking super Saiyan because he trained in like a more heavy gravity than Earth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just keep thinking because Vegeta is like super short. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was just thinking. It's like, oh, he's like Vegeta. He's super short. Anyhow.
Before I forget, I wanted to ask you, what did you think of, I'm going to say her name again, thanks to the IMDb, Lieutenant Dia Kiritan. We're going to call her Lieutenant Dia. What did you think of the sidekick from the episode?
I think she was okay. Not that much memorable. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was okay. It was very stiff, though. Very, like, all the joking, but, like, the entire show, everybody is super stiff. Everybody is, like, the livery is just, oh, yes, you know, yeah. So it is not that much, like a hit pun joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a flow. Like, you, when you make a joke or stuff, you kind of like go into your levels. Mm-hmm. And then when you're about to make the punchline, you kind of hit that, you know, mm-hmm. you know, with the
timing.
They were like, everybody was like super flat.
Yeah.
Like, if they were just reading instead of just delivering the lines.
Well, I just want to bring her up because since you were talking about Saved by the Bell, according to IMDb, Melody Rogers, her main claims to fame was playing Mrs. Melanie Morris in Saved by the Bell and like a wedding movie they did after the end of the series.
No idea. So. I only watched the first three or four seasons of Saved by the Bell. I wasn't a bigger fan.
Right.
I only watched like the three or four seasons.
And in my case, she was in a two-part episode of Night Court where Dan was having an operation done. So there was something vaguely familiar to me about her. I'm pretty confident. If anything that I would remember would be Night Court. So that was one of my favorite shows growing up.
Yeah, she was pretty flat, but that doesn't mean that it was something against her. It was pretty much the entire episode. Everybody was super flat.
It's sort of like Lucas with the prequels. You can't really blame the actors. You feel like that's the direction.
Exactly, yes. So, but she was okay. You know, she wasn't very... What I noticed about this show is that Deering and this woman, you know, they're very independent. Like, they don't take crap from the guys. Mm-hmm. It's like the guy, especially at that time, is like, I am the guy, so I am the big star and I'm the one who calls all the shot and blah, blah, blah. They were pretty much like self-sufficient, except for one time when Buck Rogers said something about like, oh, shut up or something like that, that I thought it was kind of, if it was me.
Well, that was set up because he was trying to lead on the kidnappers that they knew where the president was after the president escaped, spoiler. And so he was basically role-playing, not actually being a dick. But this is a good opening. So I read a little bit. I've been reading a book about Buck Rogers. I don't have that handy at the moment, so I can't say exactly which book it was, but I don't think there's a lot of Buck Rogers books out there. You can probably narrow it down pretty quickly. So in a previous episode, I was talking about how I think it was Erin Gray who was calling Gil Gerard like an ally when it comes to feminism and stuff. He'd done some like public displays of allyship and shit. But I read a section of the book that specifically talks to two of the writers that were pivotal to the first season. You've got Alan Brennert, who I believe is a story editor for the entire first season, and he did the teleplay for this episode. And then you had the story consultant, Ann Collins, who did the actual story, and they're both involved, I think, with the script. And so what's interesting is Ann Collins was one of the first women to be given any kind of major roles in a television show like that. She was still just the story consultant, but by 70s standards, she was doing very well for herself. Apparently, she was a sci-fi fan. And so she was very excited about working on this series. And both she and Alan Brennert talk up, the fellow they were working under, I can't remember his name off the top of my head right now. So they were the ones who were show running most of the first season. And they talk about how at first Gil Gerard was good to work with, and he was, you know, laid back guy, and they had fun on the set, and things were going good and everything. And then apparently what happened is he had made the movie, and then he went back to New York before the series was going to come out. And they were kind of bracing because they knew this wasn't going to be a critical darling. You know, they knew that this would be a show for fans, hopefully. And the feeling that they had was that Gil, like, maybe got browbeat while he was in New York, or they were making fun of him for taking on that kind of genre material. Because this is back in the days when being in a genre type show was seen as beneath a legitimate actor, and it was often a career killer. The one that people reference the most is George Reeves, who literally, when they, you know, Superman was going to get canceled, he killed himself. And there's some argument about whether or not that was true or not. But you look at somebody like, say, William Shatner, who played Captain Kirk. It took him forever. Like, he was Captain Kirk in the late 60s, and he was still considered a joke until after Buck Rogers had already ended and he'd gotten his own TV show playing a cop called T.J. Hooker. But this was kind of a career killer. And so Gil Gerard comes back from New York, and he's got a chip on his shoulder. He's got an attitude. He doesn't want like any of the humor, and he wants to take all the humor out. Although, as you pointed out,
that makes sense.
The humor isn't very good on the show anyway, so that's maybe not the bad worst call ever. But the thing that was really galling is he particularly had trouble with Ann Collins because he was constantly wanting to underwrite the female characters to make sure the Buck looked good against the female characters. That if he's having a race, he was going to be far out in front of Wilma. You know, bullshit like that. So it's sad to hear that, according to this account, because I can only speak to her account, that Gerard may have made a few big showy ally moments at some point of the course of the series, but behind the scenes, and particularly with the female that was writing a lot of the material of the first season, he's definitely not being an ally there, and he's definitely trying to pump himself up and be fairly chauvinistic. But anyway, what they talk about is the reviews are coming in from the, I don't know if it was the movie or if it was from the release of the pilot, because they took the movie and they turned it into two episodes of the show for the pilot. The reviews were not great. And so he was furious, or maybe the show's about to come out, so he was all tense, and he's feeling the weight of the show on his shoulders, and he's just like wanting to vent, and he's wanting to make changes and blah blah blah. So they all go to his bungalow, and the goal is Lansbury, the fellow's name is Bruce Lansbury, was the boss, right, underneath Glenn Larson, of course, and they had nothing but great things to say about Bruce Lansbury. So they're all there to ideally to placate Gil Gerard, to kind of soothe his ego and tell him everything's gonna be alright and stuff. And the problem is he's just being such a shit that Ann Collins can't keep her mouth shut, and she does say, look, I was young, I wasn't professional enough to keep my mouth shut, I was acting like a fourth grader. But basically, because she kept sniping at him, and they just never got on very well after that, and it basically ruined their relationship on the show, and she left fairly quickly because as a result of that. But he also talked some shit about how she wouldn't look him in the eye, and she kept looking off the side of him. And she pointed out, well, the thing is James Garner also lived in that same condominium, and I think at one point I was watching the window looking at James Garner, who she was much more interested in. But they basically conceded that after those early episodes that they'd already filmed before the reviews had come in, that he was just much colder and he just didn't have the same charisma that he used to have. And, you know, the vibe on the set was soured somewhat as a result of that. One other thing I want to point out is that Alan Brennert did do the teleplay for this, and Alan Brennert has done a lot of comic book writing. Not a lot of comic book writing, actually, that's kind of part of the point, is he's done a little bit of comic book writing that some people really, really revere. In particular, one of our fellow podcasters, Rob Kelly, just loves this guy's writing, and basically the guy comes in there and he just writes this symphony for a character where he just gets the character and he comes up with just the right angle to tell for that one little story with the character. And I don't diminish that because I've read some Brennert stuff and I've liked what I've read, but I don't, you know, I'm not as into him as Kelly is. The writing on this episode is not great though. It's actually pretty terrible, right?
It is, and that's, it is pretty simple, and that's what one of the things that I was saying about the humor, it was very flat. It's not just the humor, the entire dialogue is extremely flat. I like films or TV show when they make use of silence and then it's just show into the imagery. This one is like like silence, but not meaningful silences. It's just like very flat, humor flat. Pretty much like if you have like two people that don't know each other and that's how you pretty much talk the entire cast. It was like, yeah, you're at a fucking funeral and I'm just gonna try to make conversation. You are at a fucking funeral for somebody that you don't know and that you're just there for, you know, because you have to be there and it's just gonna continue conversation, but that kind of flatness of it. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much my feeling for the entire episode.
Yeah, it's a little weird too because the whole show was built around, they had a big hit with Different Strokes. This was at a time when NBC's ratings were not great. And so when Gary Coleman expressed an interest in doing an episode of Buck Rogers, I think based on having seen the movie, since this is the first episode, first season episode, so I don't know how many episodes mm-hmm. you would have seen for them to have time to write him an episode. And I don't know how much time they had to actually write the episode, which could be part of the problem. But because their new star wants to do a Buck, they worked it out to where he got 2 days to work on his episode. And that was it. That's all he had. I guess he did it on a weekend when he wasn't doing Different Strokes. And so they get him in here right quick, and they build him up. He's just super genius. And ultimately, he rescues himself. He manages to escape the captors, and he's fine. So ultimately, he and Wilma Deering, who finally catches up with him, they have to go back and save Buck and Dia, who can't get out of the trap for themselves. And of course, they have to break, in the first place, Buck and Dia have to break in, and the traps are so lame.
Well, before you get into that, you skip one of the most funniest moment in the entire episode is when the Vegeta, the
telepath,
he finally, when they're fighting, you know, the short guy, the Terminator, mm-hmm. and Buck Rogers and the other lady, they're fighting. Well, the telepathic guy was able to gather the information where Gary Coleman is at. So he meets them outside and say, well, I have the information and then I can give it to you by 3,000 credits.
Yeah.
But the only way...
I think it's worth pointing out that the credits are hollow foil pogs. You know? Yes. They weren't pogs yet, but they anticipated the hollow foil pogs. You know, they've got prismatic, you know, everything.
That was
the first of many uses of the silver perks.
Yeah, so anyhow, so they say, yeah, sure, whatever. And then they said, yeah, they are in this house, in the safe house, blah, 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 and I'm gonna give you the coordinates. And so I'm gonna just implant it into your brain. And then you can have like this long moment, and I'm not kidding, that's a fucking, what, like it's 20, good, 30 seconds?
It may be longer than that.
And it's just making noise like...
What's computer? It's the computer noises.
And then it just goes at the very end, bing! It's like, what, is a fucking typewriter or something? Are you telepathically typewriting the fucking coordinates to their brains?
What's funny is their instantaneous, it was slower than me doing Google Maps to find out where this place was, you know?
Pretty much, yeah. But that was the whole thing. Then it's like the eyes, and it was just a silence because this guy is so obviously saying that telepathically, and then it's just like this 20 to 30 seconds, three people just like looking at each other. It was like silent.
Bing. Well, and I like too how they both get headaches, but again, the timing is off. So it's like they have the bing and then beep beep headache. It's like, come on,
And I'm like, yeah, that's not. But that was hilarious. Actually, that was hilarious. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so then they go to rescue Gary Coleman, for which, just like you mentioned, he escaped by himself. And then Deering.
Woman Deering helps him.
Woman Deering finds him in the trash can, and it's like, oh yeah, and they have like the little comedy. It's like,
yeah, that doesn't work
comedy
at all.
Comedy. And then he explained.
By the way, I want to mention too that one of the ways in which he escapes is using this automated like food cart, mm-hmm. and this was the same cart that the kid from Fly the Navigator used to escape his captivity as well. Oh. Like a decade later, they still had that prop apparently. For okay.
So yeah, so he escaped, and the Deering woman.
Yeah, she helps him. Wait, did you really go back to the compound with the president to rescue Buck? And don't tell me this. I don't need to know. This is awful. Please stop doing this. Get out of there. And instead, they end up having to save the day.
Yeah.
And what's funny too is that the president breaks back into the place where the kidnappers are. He gets busted by the main henchman of the kidnapper, and then Wilma saves him. So at no point point does Buck Rogers do anything of value in this entire episode.
Exactly.
So in that case, I'm like, and since it was written by Ann Collins, I'm wondering if this was like a revenge episode where he just completely takes the man's balls and puts them in the silver purse of his sidekick.
Because he was actually just holding the purse or just doing everything else, like, you know, when they were deactivating that fence.
Right, so he basically does the thing, he alley-oops her where he helps her to do an acrobatic pull
and
twist over the...
And she gives her the purse right. before jumping. Uh-huh. That's what you job, Buck right. Rogers, to fucking the holding purse.
And of course all she does is hit the off switch. There's no password or anything like that.
I
no
know, it's like, oh yeah, it's right here, the switch.
And then they have that, like, that open area that's all lasers, and it just looks like something out of a bad video game. And so she throws the little disc thing that creates a path, which just makes it look even more comic booky. And as they're walking the path, the bad guys deactivate it, so they only have this one little square left with all these little squiggles around them. Our special effects have come a very long way since these days.
Oh yeah, the special effects. I'm not even gonna go into the special effects on this one because we're never gonna finish.
Yeah.
So yeah, so they finally got into that inside the compound, and then they discover Buck Rogers, obviously. And then they go into...
Well, the one thing that does happen is that Buck and Dia are supposed to be executed by the kidnapper and his super strong henchmen. Mm-hmm. And they're both older men. And randomly in a hallway, even though we've firmly established this guy's superhuman strength and density and everything else, Buck just kicks him until he goes down.
But what is
and,
that?
And even better, Dia is fighting an old man. She's supposed to be like this badass security agent. And she takes him out pretty quickly, but they're both beating up old men, and we're supposed to feel like there's some kind of an accomplishment.
And what the funnier...
But the worst part is it makes no sense that Buck can beat this guy. There's a blaster. He should just blast the guy, and that would be something. It makes no sense that all of a sudden he can just kick the old man until he falls down.
And the entire time they're fighting, I don't know if you noticed, but it was like a stunt actors.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why do you want to hire stunt people? There was like this wall are made of styrofoam. And then you can say, you know, one of the guys were hit his face into the wall, and the wall you can see like that whole
it gives
and yeah. It's like, okay, well, why do you need a stunt? And then the stuntman, it had like a total wig of like gray hair. Then you can see when he was like flying or he was being kicked, the wig started like to come out, and you can see like a black hair and then just like this white wig coming out of it. Why do you need to stun people for this? Seriously, why?
I will point out too that the henchman that mostly interacts with Gary Coleman's character is played by Albert Popwell. And I knew this guy, but I couldn't place exactly what he'd done. Of course, he did all the other TV shows, Wonder Woman and Simon and Simon and stuff like that. But the main thing is he was in almost every single Dirty Harry movie. Unfortunately, he didn't make it into the final one, the Deadpool, but he's in every single other one. Plus, he's in Coogan's Booth. So he must have done something to make Clint Eastwood like him. Maybe he was in his circle and Eastwood was good about having his buddies get cast in movies over and over again. So he plays a different character in every one. If I remember correctly, he had the most substantial role in Sudden Impact, because I think he's the guy who gives Dirty Harry like his extra special Magnum 357, you know, like it's the chrome one or some shit. But yeah, that's what I know him from, is I'd seen the Dirty Harry movies so many times and he's in all but one of them.
Actually, that's one of the things that I like about the show a little bit, the interaction about that guy and Gary Coleman.
Yeah, because he seriously wants to kill Gary Coleman. And yeah. Some of you maybe want to by the end of the episode.
Yeah. So that the whole interaction, although there's not that many, it is kind of like, I don't know, I don't want to call it cute, but yeah, good.
Well, and I thought that the interaction with the main kidnapper was good too.
Yes.
And I love that actor. That's Ray Walston. He's probably best remembered from being on My Favorite Martian, but he's a character actor that was around forever. And it's funny too, because he's clearly an old guy in the 70s and he was still an old guy in the 90s. My favorite show of his was Picket Fences, where he played the town judge, and he was sort of like the Wisdom of Solomon judge. He was like the only judge in town, it seemed like. And so he always had to give this big moral speech as he was rendering his verdict, because the show pretty much always gravitated around, you'd have like a half hour of them like doing small town bullshit, and then the back half hour would be a trial over something that happened in the midst of that small town shit, and then he'd be the moral authority at the end of the episode. So it's a little hard for me to see Ray Walston playing the bad guy, given that he's like one of my pillars of morality because of Picket Fences. But he is pretty good at it. I like he's doing all the stuff with his fingers, like he's
biting his fingernails.
And gives him that menace, like he doesn't have the regard for other people. So I think he does a good job with it until the girl in the silver go-go boots kicks his ass.
So they finally rescue, at this point, they rescue each other. Actually, Gary Coleman rescue Buck Rogers. Like, they don't rescue nobody because they end up pretty much beating up all the people. Mm-hmm. They cut into the final scene where they are at Buck Rogers' apartment and they're eating chili, but it's a Mexican chili. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's a Mexican chili.
Well, actually, you being a fan of Big Bang Theory, Sheldon often will talk about being a Texan.
But that's Texas chili.
That's Texas chili and has no beans and blah, blah, blah. So maybe there's some Mexican variant that they're aware of that, you know, maybe Mexican chili has beans. Maybe that's the big difference.
We don't have chili in Mexico.
Well, maybe they're talking about Tex-Mex and they didn't have the terminology.
Maybe. Because I didn't know I knew chili from the time that I came to visit in the U.S. when I was little.
Yeah.
You know, like the Wolf chili brand and mm-hmm. stuff like that. We have our Mexican chili, but it's like nothing to do with that. Mm-hmm. It is like, you know my Mexican chili.
Well, they don't.
It is, what it is, it's like a baked beans. You cook the baked beans and then you put tomato sauce. You cut off like pieces of wieners. That's what I call that, wieners.
I'm pretty sure that's maybe not the most legit Mexican chili though, when it involves Oscar Mayer wieners.
Well, I mean, we don't have Oscar Mayer because we're in Mexico. We just pull them food.
So then it's not, just because you are a Mexican does not mean that you automatically confirm
else to it, because you guys put ground beef and then you guys put like all this stuff.
Yeah, but I don't think you have traditional Mexican wieners. We sure was an Oscar Mayer wiener.
Well, I'm not saying like we have American stuff in Mexico too. We have hot dogs in Mexico.
I get it, but I don't think it's traditional chili if it's got Oscar Mayer wieners.
It's not a traditional, because that's what I call the Mexican chili. It's pretty much you put them in a hot dog bun, that mixture of like the baked beans, you put the wieners and the tomato sauce and ketchup, and then you put it in a fucking hot dog bun, and then you put hot sauce, like Mexican tomato hot sauce. That's our Mexican chili dogs. Like, that's how we call chili dogs. So it's not even close to what he was talking about, the Tex-Mex chili or chili in general, about the beans or no beans. So they're talking about, oh yes, you know, chili, and just don't ask where it's like, you know, the meat is coming from, because, you know, they don't want to say it's from a lizard, I guess.
Yeah, and they accidentally say at the end that I want some more chili, but too many scales in that last batch. And everybody else is like, scales? But they're already having trouble with the concept of meat and eating animals. They're semi-vegetarian, I think, very soy-based diet. I'm surprised that some asshole on the far right hasn't made some sort of memes related to Buck Rogers being a bunch of soy people. Yeah, I don't know. You think it's
not that famous, Buck Rogers.
Of a certain generation, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know absolutely nothing. I didn't know anything about Buck Rogers until, like a year ago when you start running this podcast?
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about it. So maybe that's why they didn't know about it.
Fair.
So yeah, and then they just go into like, oh yes, well, I never took a vacation, so I'm just going to take a vacation back to your place. And he said, yeah, I don't have a big mansion or anything. I just have a condominium with like pool and tennis, because it's like the national sport. I didn't get that.
I don't either. I think it was a setup for him to make a joke about how he doesn't have much for each, but he still made it the sport. They're just trying to say that he's a very egalitarian president. Oh, I know what it was. He was talking about how they used to do gladiatorial matches,
mm-hmm.
and so it's like him trying to sand off the rough edges, which again might explain why his bodyguard looks like a space hooker. Maybe these are some very retrograde motherfuckers on this planet, and he's just trying to lift them up. The main point is that
Tennis.
Superior being. That's the point. Is he Gary Coleman?
He should just say golf, and that will make it funnier. You know.
I don't care. I don't think comedy is really. I like breezy action. I don't think comedy is the forte of this show, especially because you've grown every time Twiki talks. Like every single time, I think I see you wince and groan.
Oh yes, that. What is it called? The
Twiki.
Oh man, that is really. Yes, I squinch. I don't like that character at all. Like
it's funny because because he's so innocent looking, and then he has the penis head and he talks like a degenerate. So it's there's a lot of
cognitive dissonance there. And the funny, and the humor is not funny at all.
Tweaky was far and away the most popular character on the show, and like his merchandise and toys and stuff outsold everybody else's easily. So he was like the breakout star. So kids liked him. I think personally is because I grew up on Looney Tunes, and Mel Blanc voiced like half of all Looney Tunes at least. And so when you recognize his particular affectations, and it is sort of a, there's a Bugs Bunny quality to Tweaky. It's obviously more guttural, but like the basics of the delivery and the accent are fairly similar to Bugs
what
Bunny.
What is the somehow, other brown thing that is more like a wise talking?
Oh, shit.
Because he was had it on his neck, too. He was on the desk when they first got the mission.
Dr. Theopolis.
Okay. I like him okay, because it's more like proper.
Again, it's the whole R2-D2 C-3PO thing. It's he's the, you know, diplomatic, poised one, somewhat passive-aggressive, and then you've got Tweaky who's making, when he has the curse, that's when he goes into C-3PO speak, so.
Yeah.
Or sorry, okay. R2-D2 speak.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah.
I'm not a big fan of that Star Wars shit. I don't know what anybody's talking about on that Star Wars stuff.
So, yeah, so that's, I don't like that Tweaky character at all, so, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that was the end of the episode.
And the worst part is, we were supposed to record this last year, and so I subjected you to this episode twice. Now, I personally think that you could have just, like, watched the coming attractions and been able to do the episode based on that.
Well, was a funny
you
thing.
You have the podcasting integrity to insist on rewatching it, like, a couple or 3 months later, so twice in a row this show, and I have my apologies to
you
for that.
Yeah, so I just have to point this out.
But you
I was on vacation, and I asked you 3 times, when are we gonna record this Buck Rogers episode, because I was bored. Nothing to do with a fucking pandemic, right? And then like, oh no, later. On a Sunday, before me coming back to work, oh no, we are recording Buck Rogers, right? So I'm like, seriously? I'm like on the first week of my 3 weeks vacation where I'm like already passing out of sleep every night. And I was gonna watch it on my break time because I'm working from home. But the whole mess, chaos happened today, the Capitol and stuff like that.
So. You had other things occupying your mind at the time.
Yes.
And now the Earth Defense Directory, the 108th Sage, and I'm Freaks and I'm Nostalgia, Austin Cook and all, Bakeman Save New Year, Same Dooms, Chris Thompson, Class 1000, A Marvel Super Heroes Live RPG, El Romero, Eric Borden, who added Bitty, Gregory Litchfield, The Hammer Strikes, Random Geeky Stuff, Hawkoff Iowa's Joe Crawford, Jeffrey Brown, Joey Heroin, Just in Time with the JNT Baggers, Keith G. Baker, Kim Ellis, Lauren Skinkasard, Lorenzo Sleestack, Luke J. Conetti, Earth Destruction Directive, Mark Woodland, Mike Siebert Radio Podcast, MLB 2472, Odell Abner, Dracula, Professor Frenzy, Random Minable, Randy Caldwell, Resurrections, and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Richard Field, Richard G., who added So Funny, Thanks for Including Me, Ryan Daly, Scott X, Secret Wars and Beyond Podcast, Slang Word Scott, Stimbot 5000, Stop 40, Aquar Excellentia, Super Matt Chalk, Jala Knight, Time Price Pod Crasher, Tuck and Vera, Thoris of Mars.
Characters and events depicted in this podcast are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. The television program Buck Rogers in the 25th Century is copyrighted by Universal City Studios Incorporated. All rights are reserved. Buck Rogers characters are by and courtesy of Leisure Concepts Incorporated and Robert C. Dill. Produced in association with Glenn A. Larson Production and Bruce Lansbury Productions Limited and Universal, an MCA company. Buck Fucking Get Down Rogers is a fan production. All copyrighted materials under fair use with no infringement intended.